Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Do you want to get your message heard? With low advertising rates and great sponsorship opportunities, Sheffield Live can help you reach thousands of local people. Get your campaign on Sheffield Live. To find out more about advertising on Sheffield Live, write to advertising@sheffieldlive.org or call 0114 281 4082.
Welcome one and all to Thank Goodness It's Folk here on Sheffield Live on a beautiful spring day. We hope it's lovely where you are too. James Fagan with you in the first hour and Sam Hindley in the second. Today on Sheffield Live's Thank Goodness It's Folk, we celebrate the legendary recording engineer and producer Bill Leader, who died earlier this week at the age of 96, leaving behind an unmatchable catalogue of recordings of some of the most important traditional and revival singers in the history of music. Bill Leader's catalogue includes some of the artists I'm going to play today, including Bert Jansch, Hedy West, The Watersons, Bright Phoebus, and Christy Moore's Prosperous. Then I'll be talking to the wonderful Scottish fiddle player Laura Jane Wilkie, who has just recorded a wonderful album with Ian Carr called Vent, and she is on tour. And I would urge you to check out the music and also listen to what Laura Jane Wilkie has to say about the origin of the fascinating tunes she plays from the Gaelic walking song tradition. It's a really lovely interview, and I know you're going to enjoy it immensely, so stick with us.
And I hope you'll prove kind with your eggs and strong beer, for we'll come no more nigh you until the next year.
And the first that comes in is Lord Nelson, you'll see, with a bunch of blue ribbons tied around by his knee, and a star on his breast that like silver doth shine. And I hope he remembers it's pay-sagging time.
Here's one, two, three jolly lads all in one mind. We are come a pay-sagging, and I hope you'll prove kind. And I hope you'll prove kind with your eggs and strong beer. For we'll come no more nigh you until the next year.
And the next that comes in, it is Lord Collingwood, and he fought with Lord Nelson till he shed his blood. And he's come from the sea, old England to view, and he's come a-pay-sagging with the whole of his crew.
Here's one, two, three jolly lads all in one mind. We are come a pay-sagging, and I hope you'll prove kind. And I hope you'll prove kind with your eggs and strong beer. For we'll come no more nigh you until the next year.
And the last that comes in is out of spot, you'll see. He's a valiant old man and in every degree. He's a valiant old man and he wears a pigtail. And all his delight is a drinking mulled ale.
Here's 1, 2, 3 jolly lads all in one mind. We are come apace again, and I hope you'll prove kind. And I hope you'll prove kind with your eggs and strong beer. But we'll come no more nigh you until the next year. Come, ladies and gentlemen, sit by the fire. Put your hands in your pockets and give us our desire. Put your hands in your pockets and treat us all right. If you give nought, we'll take nought. Farewell and good night. Here's 1, 2, 3 jolly lads all in one mind. We are come apace again, and I hope you'll prove kind. And I hope you'll prove kind with your eggs and strong beer. But we'll come no more nigh you until the next year.
The unmistakable sound of the Watersons from their debut album, Frost and Fire, recorded in 1965 by Bill Leader, who we are celebrating in the first section of today's Thank Goodness It's Folk. What an extraordinary legacy Bill Leader has. At the age of 96, he passed away on Tuesday, but he is so connected with the folk revival in the British Isles to the extent that you could argue that he is the single most important recording engineer to have graced the studios and lounge rooms and bedrooms of the country in the revival, starting in the 1950s. Bill Leader's list of the artists he recorded is as long as both your arms put together. It's an extraordinary list. The Watersons, just one of the many, many groups who had the pleasure of knowing Bill Leader and had the privilege of being recorded by him. Famously, he started recording folk artists in his flat in London on one of the very first magnetic tape recorders owned by anybody in the recording industry here, and released those early records on the Topic label. He also worked at the time for Transatlantic Records and went on to set up two very important labels on which are recorded some of the most beloved recordings in the British Isles folk music, including the Leader catalogue, named after himself, which was his traditional label, including such legendary artists as Seamus Ennis, Paddy Tunney, the Copper Family, George Dunn, Margaret Barry, the list goes on. Then, of course, Trailer Records, also a label of Bill Leader's, and it would take me the rest of the program to tell you the significance of the Trailer catalogue, but let's mention Martin Wyndham Reid, Robin and Barry Dransfield, Tony Rose, Nick Jones, Dave and Tony Arthur, the High Level Ranters, Dick Gocken, Ray Fisher, Peter Bellamy, Swan Arcade, John Kirkpatrick, Mike Harding, Pete and Chris Coe, Leon Russellson, Roy Bailey, and of course, Bright Phoebus, one of the most treasured albums ever released on a British label. One of my very favourite Bill Leader recordings, released on Topic in 1965, was Hedy West with Old Times and Hard Times. And here's a song that I was first drawn attention to by Martin Simpson, who sings a version too, but he got it from this recording of Hedy West singing Fair Rosamond, recorded by Bill Leader.
I have a sister, young Clifford said, a sister no man knows. She hath a color all in her cheeks, like a drop of blood in snows. She hath a waist, a waist, a waist, like to my silver cane. I would not for 10,000 worlds have King Henry know her name. King Henry in his fair bower was hid so close and still that every word young Clifford said he wrote down in a bill. The first fair line she looked upon, she did begin to smile. The next fair line she looked upon, the tears run down an aisle. Oh, cursed be my brother Clifford. Oh, cursed may he be. Can't he dote on his hawks and hounds? But he must dote on me.
Angie, written by Davy Graham, but performed there, famously, by Bert Jansch, recorded by Bill Leader, who passed away this week at the age of 96. Imagine being the engineer and producer who put a microphone on that guitar and recorded that piece of music in your flat in London. Bill Leader, one of the most significant and most well-loved members of the British folk revival. I'll play a little bit more of him after the next segment of the program, which I'm very excited about. I had the chance yesterday to catch up with Scottish fiddle player Laura Jane Wilkie, who is about to embark on a UK tour celebrating her album Vent, which she made with Ian Carr. And we're going to hear the first of a couple of tracks from that right now, called Mermaid. And then I'll be talking to Laura Jane Wilkie, and I really hope you can listen to this fascinating interview about where Laura gets her inspiration and where she got the tunes for the music you're about to hear. And also an appeal to anybody in the Sheffield area to come and see Laura and Ian for a night which I guarantee will be absolutely mesmerising at the Greystones on April 17th. This is Mermaid by Laura Jane Wilkie. Well, that beautiful piece of music is called Mermaid, and it is the choice of my guest this morning on the program, Laura Jane Wilkie, and it comes from her album Vent, which many of my listeners will know already, Laura, because we've been enthusing about it and playing it since we first got hold of it from Hudson Records. It's a beautiful piece of work altogether, and Sam Hindley, who sends his love and regards, and we'll see you fairly soon when you come to Sheffield, has given me the honour today of talking to you on Thank Goodness It's Folk. So welcome to the program.
Oh, lovely. Thanks so much for that lovely introduction. Hi.
Absolute pleasure. For people who haven't heard the record yet, maybe we should start, Laura, by saying that it is largely made up of music on the fiddle, which is your main instrument, inspired by the Gaelic walking song tradition of the Hebrides. And who better to explain that than yourself? Could you tell us a little bit about the walking songs, what they were used for, what they probably are used for, although I guess they are more known for the historical, you know, the trade that went on up there, and how you came to be inspired to play them as fiddle pieces?
Yeah, well, okay, right, I'll get into it. So first of all, walking is spelt W-A-U-L-K-I-N-G, so not like walking the dog or walking away. Walking is, I suppose, the activity of basically bashing a textile that's been woven like on a table to in some kind of ammonia with an asterisk, to basically to bind the material, the fibres together, and to make the dye stay in the cloth as well.
Yeah. That's been, so we're talking about the manufacture of tweed particularly, aren't we?
Or is tweed. Is it?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, tweed.
It was women's work primarily, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah. So while men were primarily, you know, doing work on the land or going off to sea and catching fish, etc., women were at home and usually gathered around a table to do this, and then once the thread had been spun and the cloth had been woven, then they would have to do this, which was very laborious and took a long time. And so to entertain themselves while they were doing this work, they just made up songs kind of just in the spur of the moment. The songs were a vehicle really for the women in the room to either to tell stories or usually to sort of share gossip or to because, you know, they were in a sort of safe environment where their husbands and fathers and, you know, men basically were not present, so they could get away with talking about things as we all do when we're in sort of safe company in that way. And they did it via song, which kind of made everybody join in. There was little refrains that were really easy to hook on to, and so one person would usually kind of lead the song and lead the verses, and then everyone else would join in with a little refrain.
Are we talking about Harrison Lewis specifically, or was it in other places too?
Highlands and Islands. All of those places. I believe it was something that was practiced everywhere, really, in the Highlands and Islands, that made textiles from wool, or tweed, basically.
And how did you come to get interested in the songs, and what made you decide that you could convert them into instrumentals?
Well, I have Gaelic in my heritage in my family. Although your listeners may know already that, you know, after the clearances and then generations after, there is like a bit of a, what would you call it, like a enforced cultural dampening, I suppose, by the UK government, and that kind of stayed for generations after, and it became a sort of like peasant's language, or like my granny didn't want to teach it to my mum because it was like taboo. It was she thought she wouldn't get a job, or that she'd be overlooked and seen as a like a chiefster, or a, you know, like just badly educated.
It's incredible to think that is in your mum's lifetime, that kind of fear, isn't it, of their own language
everywhere.
And culture. It's quite incredible, really.
Quite incredible. And I mean, it's something that's sort of omnipresent. In my particular area of the world, that's the link that I have to it. But But I'm really lucky, on the other hand, to live in Glasgow, where there's a really rich Gaelic culture and lots of singers from all over the place, all over Scotland, and different dialects of Gaelic that sing either informally or in concerts. And I'm sure you play many of them on your show, and or have gone to see singers like Kim Carney and Julie Fowlis and Josie Duncan, etc. There was a song session in Glasgow that I used to go along to just with my fiddle. And they play songs from like Bob Dylan to the Beatles and everything in between. And usually there would be a little sort of section where Josie Duncan, the leader of the session, would sort of lead on a bunch of Gaelic songs for the Gaels that were in the room. And I just was really struck by, you know, it might have seemed, because if I wasn't a native Gaelic speaker, or whoever else wasn't a native Gaelic speaker in the session, that it might have felt a bit exclusionary at that point, but it felt very inclusive and welcoming and fun. And also the tunes were just so good.
Yeah.
You know, and I wondered if I could, you know, just that feeling of inclusivity, I think, is a lot of the reason why a lot of people get into playing folk music, because it feels like a community, and that's what you get from playing melodies in common with other people or singing
with
other people. You know, I've been playing the fiddle for a long time and playing fiddle in sessions, which I love. Although sometimes I've been feeling at that time that the sessions maybe felt a little bit exclusive sometimes.
Mm.
Not necessarily to me, but definitely to me when I was younger, you know, and I think to some other people. So I kind of thought, oh, wow, like this feeling of inclusivity, like we need more of this.
Mm.
So I thought about trying to find some of these songs, particularly from where I am from, which is Rosshire,
right,
north of Inverness, a place called Tain, where Gaelic used to be spoken, but there's no native speakers there anymore.
Mm.
And so then I was in the archives in the School of Scottish Studies, which are digitised, thankfully, on a website called either Cistal Riches in Scots or Topan an Duochas in Gaelic.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
Oh my God, it's a treasure trove. Although I will say, like I've said this quite a few times to people, it's a bit like TK Maxx, you know, other knockoff designer stores are available, but it's you know, you have to kind of really root through.
Oh, no doubt.
All the, you know, to find your gems, but you do find them. They're there.
Well, you do, and you know what you're doing there is you're in common with so many people over decades now who have gone into archives and records and had to sift through and had to find it. And it's just not all laid out for you there. You have to be selective and you have to know what it is that you want to choose, don't you? So you had that experience. But I wonder, just on the singing thing, and converting them into fiddle tunes, do you feel that it's important for you to sing them at some point in that process, or do you lift them straight from a sung song onto your fiddle? How does that work?
A bit of both, to be honest. I was really lucky that the particular contributor on the archive website that I was really drawn to is this lady called Kate McDonald from a place in South Uist. And I was talking to one of my friends, Ailey Cormack, who's a member of Sheehan and Valtos, in case your listeners are aware of those bands, but she is really, really, you know, familiar with all of the archive recordings, particularly of Gaelic songs, as a Gaelic native Gaelic speaker from Skye. Anyway, I was talking to her and I was telling her that I'd been listening to these songs. I've been trying to, at first I was trying to just lift them onto my fiddle, you know, like straight away. And she said, oh, do you know that Kate McDonald is the mother of Rona Lightfoot? And Rona Lightfoot is the first lady who was allowed to compete on the bagpipes in any competition in the world. And she's still alive. She's about to be 90 and she lives in Inverness now. So that brought me to finding Rona's home landline number and contacting her and asking her if I could come and talk to her about
how fantastic
the song. So she then kind of taught me them. The same one, you know, I'd play her the record of her mum on the computer and she'd go, how is my mother in that box? And just, I think she was playing, but you know, it was so funny.
What a beautiful thing to be part of.
Yeah. yeah, she was so generous to me as a Gaelic learner.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, she would kind of repeat it over and over, and I'd sing it and then play it. And then when I got it, she'd say, "Good girl." And then I knew. That's when I know.
Well, I've got so many questions about this, and you know, but I have to think about getting some music in as well. So, but I do want to ask you a couple of things about it. The first one is, the first track that we heard this morning was Mermaid, and perhaps you can tell us a little bit about that song.
Yeah, that song is, it's a little story from the narrator. A lady has been down to the beach, and she's been like picking shellfish, like cockles and things. And she sees this glimmer in the water, and she says, like, it translates as, like, "Today I saw a wonder." It's Snisha Kunich Mi and Tunich, which means "Today I saw a wonder." And she's kind of alluding to this beastie, in inverted commas, that she's seen in the water. But the beastie that she's talking about is a selkie or a mermaid. And she's saying, like, it's quite like a meditative, like, sort of talking about what she's seeing in the surroundings. And there's not much juicy gossip in this one, but it's just a nice sort of whimsical story with a lot of
absolutely
like descriptive language.
Well, it's lovely to hear another story or song about selkies, because the one that is so well known is brilliant. But selkie myth is so ubiquitous and in that area, and it's so common. It's amazing that to me that there aren't more ballads about them. But it sounds like this is one of them. Even though it might not be very detailed, it's definitely a selkie song.
Yeah, definitely. I love it.
Well, that's
it's very beautiful.
Gorgeous. You're very lucky, I must say, and I'm sure Ian feels the same working with you, but you are very lucky to have one of the best guitar accompanists on the planet.
Absolutely.
And I don't think there's much argument about that. Ian is a remarkable musician, isn't he? He's so fast at picking things up, but also he's so inventive. And at the same time, he never dominates. He's just got that way. He drives. He's not afraid to lead, but he just doesn't dominate. He's an extraordinary musician. How did you come to collaborate with him, and what's it like?
Well, that is such a good way. That's an amazing description. I couldn't have put it better myself. He really he doesn't drive, but he steers. And I like that.
Me too.
But yes, I met Ian about 10 years ago, maybe longer, in Glasgow. He was staying with a friend of mine, Tom Gibbs, and a guy called Ian Thompson, who's a sound engineer. Tom Gibbs is a brilliant piano player. And Ian was staying with them. I think he was touring. I used to go around to their flat anyway quite often just to play tunes. And then this time they were like, "Laura, Ian Carr is going to be here." And I didn't know Ian Carr when I was really, really young. I hadn't like listened to his records or, you know, the Swap records like most other people had. I came to him quite late on at a party. It's very like musician after party vibe. It was like in a living room, and Chris Deaver was like to me, "Laura, you need to listen to this." And we literally like sat around this really nice audio system, like sound system, and he put on Ian's solo record, and we just kind of like watched, like it was like watching the telly, you know, like looking at the speakers, like, and then just sort of like he would just have a giggle about, we'd just laugh about all the things we were hearing because we were in wonder, you know. So I was already, you know, at that point I was like, oh my god. And then of course I like dived straight into the back catalogue and found Swap and found the duo stuff with Cadden Tweed all this stuff on Kate Rusby's records. And then he was just in a living room that I frequented in Glasgow, and we just had such fun, you know, playing for hours one afternoon. And after that, whenever he came back to Scotland, we would just hang out and play, usually in a big group. But then Tom Gibbs, the piano player I was talking about, and I joined his band, the Various Artists, and we've been touring a bit with him around Sweden and a bit involved in the UK and Ireland over the years. Honestly, he's just my best friend. He's just brilliant.
Well, it's absolutely lovely to hear that. And I think I've changed the map of how I want this to go now, because I think we should zone in a little bit on what you do with Ian. And let's do that now. The track that you've chosen, one of the ones that you thought represented nicely the interaction you have with him between the fiddle and the guitar, is the second track on the record. The record's called Vent, and everybody should own a copy without a doubt. And Lift Up My Love is the name of the track. Can you tell us about Lift Up My Love, and perhaps you could just briefly describe to me and the listeners what it is you like about Ian's playing on this track.
The song is a really well-known walking song in Scotland, and Ian and I actually got together just kind of out of the sort of tail end of lockdown, and he came over to Glasgow, and we, like we normally do, we just, you know, get our instruments out and we start playing, and we usually just record everything that we're jamming in case, you know, something interesting happens. And with this particular track and another one on the record called A Man Ran Off, we just hit record and jammed it for like 5 minutes, and that turned out to be the arrangement for those two tracks.
And I think you were telling me before that you were in, should we say, quite a relaxed state.
Yes.
Quite an experimental and relaxed state with Ian at that point.
Exactly.
Conducive to musical exploration. Should we put it like that?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, it's quite amazing what's come out of that. And it doesn't surprise me to hear that, because something I love about his playing, and it's transferred into your playing too on this, is that sense of complete wild adventure that is possible within the confines of traditional music. You know, we sometimes think that we're given trad tunes and that they're a straitjacket, or that we have these confines, but actually they're just a doorway, aren't they?
I guess, yeah. And you can let them be, or they're a vehicle. Mm. I think, like, you can drive them.
I absolutely. That is the fun. That is the joy of it. Well, sure. Let's hear you, Laura, with Ian on this beautiful track. This is Lift Up My Love.
Thank you.
So very, very lovely and such great music. That is Laura Jane Wilkie's new album, Vent. The track was called Lift Up My Love. It is one of the walking songs interpreted there by Laura and Ian Carr on guitar. As you know, Ian Carr plays guitar. That rhyme has stuck around a long time, and it's a good one. Laura, you're about to go on tour. This is your second tour, I think, of the UK with Ian. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And we're going to quite a few places that we haven't been to before, which is nice.
Feel free to tell us all of them. Go for it.
Wow. Well, the ones I suppose that are sort of maybe gettable to for your audience might be, first of all, I suppose the Sheffield date, we're going to be playing Sam's gigs at the Greystones on April the 17th.
Excellent.
Which I'm really excited about.
I'm just going to reinforce that for everybody. You have heard this on the show before, but you must come to Greystones on the 17th of April to see Laura Jane Wilkie and Ian Carr playing this beautiful music if you're anywhere near Sheffield. And tickets are available from Live at Sam's.
Right? Thank you very much.
On you go.
We're also going to be a little bit north in Penrith the day before on the 16th at Blue Jam Arts, which is going to be really nice. Ian's got a lot of history with Penrith, so it'll be nice to be there. And then really exciting to go also to Jock Tildesley's gigs in OSG.
Fantastic.
On the 19th. And we're going to be at the Green Note in London on the 20th. I wonder if your listeners might know of Edmund Byers, a little village in Northumberland, on April the 24th.
Oh, that's great.
And then we're back up to Scotland, really. And then I'm doing a couple of shows way down south at the end of May. Mm. But that's not even with Ian, actually. That's going to be with Fergus McCready.
Ah, great. Great. Well, and how do people find your tour dates? What's the easiest place for them to find those?
Easiest place, probably if they're on the internet, I would say probably you can either just Google Laura Jane Wilkie and Ian Carr and tickets, that might come up. But basically, if you're familiar with Linktree, the website that lots of artists have, just type in Linktree/LauraJWilkie.
Okay.
And all the tickets are there or on my bio in my Instagram.
Great.
Page.
Okay, cool. I want to ask you about the violin, the fiddle. Did you choose it or did it choose you, Laura?
Oh, I chose it, actually. Mm-hmm. But then over the years, I've definitely been like, why did I not choose a cello? Or like, why did I not choose, you know, because you actually could choose, at that time. I think I was like 10 years old and I could choose. And with cello, you're kind of working with gravity and it's a lot easier on your body if you play it well, and it's so satisfying and low and loud and but quite soft and gorgeous. The fucking fiddle is like, I chose it, but increasingly it's chosen me and now I'm stuck.
Well, I'm married to a fiddle player of some 40 years, and I know it's got to be a love hate thing, but it's the results in both cases, I'm happy to say, are absolutely gorgeous, and we the listeners are very lucky that you have stuck with it. Really, frankly, you were part very famously of Canaris Quintet, a band that you're no longer with, although you've said there's nothing acrimonious there whatsoever. But and it's a lovely ensemble, and we're going to hear about that at the end. But I suppose since we've touched on it, was it just time for you to pursue solo things?
Well, to be honest, like, we weren't really doing tons and tons and tons of gigs with Canaris, just because for very different, very various reasons in everyone's case, you know, everyone's doing lots and lots of different things.
Yeah.
And it was really lovely to do, you know, I loved those gigs. I loved playing with those girls. And it was always fun. It was always like festival gigs and usually not too far away from home, which is quite nice as well.
Totally.
But also some really fun trips away, you know, to go and play at different festivals and stuff. I started getting really busy with a bunch of session stuff and then some of my own stuff. We've been doing it for nearly 10 years. And not everything
has to go forever, and not all good things go forever either. You know, it can be really good and just last for a few years. I think that's a really important thing to say. And also, I would love to just hear a brief thought on the fact that I think Canaris Quintet, for those in those 10 years, were exceptionally important for the Scottish music scene. One of the things that everyone's been trying to focus on is more women in music, more women on stage, and despite the efforts of some people on the scene to book more diversely and to make sure that they have more women represented, we still often find that so-called women-led bands are still mostly men, you know, the rhythm section. Yeah, and I think, you know, it must have been said a lot about the band, and I don't want to get into the realms of cliche, but it was an important part of Canaris for me and for a lot of listeners that your rhythm section as well was female.
Exactly, yeah. Absolute powerhouse rhythm section. And yeah, that thing of like instrumentalists on stage or being represented on stage as not just men. The men are doing a great job.
Of course.
But we can, it's an amazing, it felt like we had a responsibility and and they're still doing brilliant gigs, and I think they've got a record on the way, actually.
Mm. Oh, that's good news.
But yeah, it felt really powerful. Like I think we all felt like a sense of power and responsibility on stage.
Yeah.
You know, within the niche that is folk music, I'm not trying, you know, we're not trying to necessarily change the world, but sure. I think that in general, we're all trying to just make the world in our little bit, a little bit nicer or better or fader or something.
I like the idea of changing the world one walking song at a time. Like maybe that's your new like your new t-shirt.
But,
you know, it's as good as any strategy, it seems to me, to change the world. You may as well do it with walking songs. Where are you going to go next with your solo repertoire?
Well, to be like I loved playing with Canaris, and I loved the energy of that and it being really sort of like high energy. But sensitive at the same time. But then with this record with Ian, it was a bit more free form. And I suppose, like, if I'm talking in terms of like the fiddle, it was like a lot more meditative and focused on tone and like inflection, and rather than like lots of notes or technical like flashiness or not that there's any, you know, there's a place for everything. And I must say, I really love detail. That's really my thing, and getting really deep into whatever it is that I'm doing. And so I loved that process, and the people that I met and the communities that I ended up becoming part of or happening upon or sometimes creating by sort of interacting and engaging with Gaelic culture as a learner, and trying to make, you know, show other people that they could also do that as an instrumentalist or as a non-native Gaelic speaker.
Yeah.
So that was really enriching and has sustained me for a long time and still does, and not necessarily financially, but like in terms of like my outlook on the world and how I go around my work practice. But I suppose if Ian and I are always, whenever we get together, we end up writing. We don't even really mean to. We just play. We're just playing all the time.
Yeah.
And it's there's quite a few more. The music is a lot more upbeat when it's things that we've written ourselves.
Sure.
There's a lot of faster stuff.
Yeah.
That's happening. But a bit of a
watch this space, I guess.
I'm unsure what's going to happen next, to be honest. But I'm excited to if I ever manage to. To get that organized, then we'll do that.
Well, there is no rush at all, and the record then is still in relative terms very new, and there's still a lot of audience who haven't seen or heard it yet, and so there's still much to be done. And it's beautiful, and we're really grateful that you've made it, and we're grateful that you've come on the program. And I'm sure Sheffield will turn out for you. Oh, you're welcome. It's been really interesting to talk to you about it. And we've actually played a couple of tracks from it. So I think if it's all right with you, we're going to play a track that I have played several times on the show because I think it's outstanding. And it's a tune of yours called Toria's 50th, and it's from Canaris Quintet. Could you tell us about what this tune was like to play for you with the band and what it meant? Because I know it's been one of your most popular recordings.
Well, I wrote it as a commission for a lady who was celebrating her birthday, and she wanted to get a birthday present for herself. And she was also a step dancer, Toria, and she wanted me to write something that was happy and that she could dance to. And so I chose the key of E because it's nice and bright. And then it just so happened at the same time, like we were putting material together with Canaris for our first record. Playing that with those girls is one of the biggest joys of my entire life. Like I love it and I miss it. And I still love playing the tune, but playing it with that band and with, you know, Jenny, Lynn, Fiona and LB, it's just, it's sparkly. I love it.
Well, so do we. And it's just been really lovely to have you on the program, Laura. And good luck with your tour. I hope to get to the Sheffield gig, but if not, I'll see you on the road somewhere. And have a great trip.
Thanks so much.
No worries. Here is Toria's 50th from Canaris Quintet. And my guest today, Laura Jane Wilkie. Canaris Quintet featuring Laura Jane Wilkie with her tune Toria's 50th. And I really hope you can go and see Laura when she comes to Sheffield on April 17 at the Greystones with the fantastic Ian Carr, a night not to be missed. We're celebrating some of the amazing recordings made by the great Bill Leader, who died earlier this week at the age of 96. And I couldn't really not play this track. Here is Bright Phoebus by Mike and Lal Waterson, recorded by Bill Leader.
Today, bright Phoebus, she smiled down on me for the very first time. For the very first time, she smiled on me. Today, bright Phoebus, she smiled down on me for the very first time. For the very first time, she smiled on me. No more
very first time, for the very first time, she smiled on me.
That's it from me in the first half, but I'm going to leave you with one of the most significant recordings ever made by Bill Leader, Prosperous, the second album by Christy Moore. Christy invited Bill Leader across to Ireland and introduced him to his mates, Donald Lunny, Andy Irvin and Liam O'Flynn, and they made what was ostensibly a Christy Moore album, but of course, as we know, they became Planxty shortly thereafter, and therefore one of Bill Leader's greatest legacies in music. See you after the break. Here's Rambling Robin from Christy Moore.
First from boyhood I came to a man, to ramble the nation through I soon began. All the rambling thought that came into me mind, so they christened me Ramblin' Robin now. So they christened me Ramblin' Robin. O'er hills and o'er mountains I used for to go, I slept in the woods where there's frost and there's snow. No anxiety ever came into me mind, so contented was Ramblin' Robin, oh. So contented was Ramblin' Robin. The wind and the rain, oh, they blew me quite cold. The parents at home, they were both growing old. Oh, me father did weep and me mother did cry, for the loss of their Ramblin' Robin, oh. For the loss of their Ramblin' Robin. When 16 long years they were over and past, me poor mother's sorrow was ended at last. And me father the nation did range through and through, oh, in search of his Ramblin' Robin, oh. Oh, in search of his Ramblin' Robin. When all me past follies they came to an end, to me your native village I did attend. But the neighbours that told me me parents were dead, filled with grief for their Ramblin' Robin, oh. Filled with grief for their Ramblin' Robin. Oh, where shall I wander and where shall I go? Me heart is filled with sorrow and woe. Oh, the nation I'll wander through and through, and an end put to Ramblin' Robin, oh. And an end put to Ramblin' Robin.